Well, again, good morning, friends. Good to be in this space with you. Thanks, Rhonda, for the welcome, and Ryan and the worship team for the songs. And, man, Lyndon, thanks for that prayer. I love our prayer of confession. Every week, I love it. But some weeks, man, it gets in me. This was one of those weeks from the moment you started. Thank you for that. In fact, as you were praying, I was imagining, I'm going to talk about rules today. What if it was a rule? Every time we were going to have a big conversation, every time we were going to make a public speech, every time we were going to have an argument, we first had to say that prayer together. What if we had to all do that, and then you can make your speech? We had to all do that, and then you could have your public argument. We had to all do that, and then you could have an important conversation. As you were praying, it just felt to me like that would be transformative. So I'm going to ask Lisa to start doing that. And I'll join her as well. Thank you. Thank you for your prayer. They watched him so that they might accuse him. And they said to him, "Look, why do you and your disciples do what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" As I mentioned, today I would like to talk with you about rules. Are you a fan of rules? I suspect, as much as we might complain about them at times, we all love them. In fact, I'd even go so far as to say we are a people infatuated with our rules. I mean, we don't always like other people's rules, but we love our own. And we debate them incessantly, whether in politics or sports or, goodness sake, even in board games. It's a truism in my household. My family can't even make it through a single round of Uno without finding some technicality that someone wants to argue over regarding the rules. We are a people infatuated with at least our own understanding of the rules. And of course, it's not just the Reed household that does this. We humans, we have rules for everything. Did you know that in the state of Washington, my own state of origin, there is a rule about Sasquatch poaching? Did you know this? I am not kidding. In 1969, and then again in 1991, lawmakers in Washington determined it was worth it to spend their time debating the pros and cons of shooting a Sasquatch. And on both occasions, not only did they debate the idea, they actually made laws making it illegal to hunt and kill Bigfoot. What's more, Washington lawmakers have now set aside nearly 2 million acres of land known as Sasquatch Protection and Refuge Areas. The reasoning, we are told, is that if Bigfoot and his family are real, then they're an endangered species and need of our protection. You've got to really love rules to start making up laws about mythical creatures, right? We are a people infatuated with rules. And by the way, lest you think we Washingtonians are simply the wacky ones in this country, you should know that there are, in fact, bizarre laws everywhere. You can look this up easily. In Arizona, for example, there's a law for your donkey. Donkeys aren't allowed to sleep in bathtubs in Arizona. I have no response to that.
I don't think Arizona does either.
But it's an actual law. In Illinois, it's against the law to fish, and I quote, "sitting on the neck of a giraffe." This is a thing. So if you find yourself on the neck of a giraffe and you want to fish, please don't do so in Chicago, because it is against the law. In Pennsylvania, if you're drowsy and sleeping outdoors, please avoid sleeping on refrigerators, because that is a finable offense. Though, as it turns out, if you're indoors, you're welcome to do it as often as you want. One more. In Wyoming, and I promise I am not making this up, in Wyoming, it's illegal to take pictures of rabbits in the month of June. 11 months of the year, fine. But in June, please, no rabbit paparazzi. allow me to say once more, we are a people infatuated with our rules. I mean, we have to be to come up with stuff like that. And so, it should come as no surprise to any of us that our fascination with rules follows us into our faith as well. Did you know that according to researchers, if you ask non-Christians what Christianity is all about, the number one most common answer you will receive is a set of rules. And according to that same study, if you pay attention to the way Christians themselves talk about Christianity, you'll hear the exact same thing. It's all about a set of rules. We are a people infatuated with our rules. But let me be quick to clarify, because it sounds like I'm putting them down. I don't mean to suggest by all of this that rules are a bad thing. Rules are quite often quite helpful. And typically, despite the rather ridiculous examples I gave you just a moment ago, most of the time, we make our rules with the very best of intentions. And yet, there is more than a touch of irony to the fact that while Jesus is so frequently condemned for breaking the rules, the community that carries his name seems to be best known for making and enforcing them. Which is why Jesus' words in our gospel passage today are not simply about silly religious leaders way back then, but about all of us today. For we are no different from them when it comes to our rules. In fact, given what we read about the Pharisees today, I think we should probably have nothing but sympathy for them. For in their defense, they were getting all hot and bothered about the Sabbath today. In their defense, the command to observe the Sabbath did, in fact, come straight from scriptures. It's right there in the Ten Commandments, number 4, in fact, right after the command to avoid using God's name in vain, and right before the command to honor your mother and father. It says quite plainly, observe the Sabbath and keep it holy. Which is why, in an effort to help the people under their care, these religious leaders wanted to help them faithfully follow God's given regulations. So the religious leaders in their community came up with a set of rules relating to the Sabbath. They were more or less practical advice on how to go about honoring the Sabbath and keeping it holy. It was a list that they had of 39 laws, which Jesus and his disciples were breaking today. 39 laws that served as straightforward strictures on how best to practice the Sabbath's sacredness. And while all those rules, some of them anyway, might sound just a little bit odd to us today, given our distance from them, for example, one of the rules was you're not allowed to shear a sheep on the Sabbath, for example. I think we can at least appreciate what those Pharisees were after. They were providing practical guidelines, as we do all the time, for the people that they happen to shepherd with regard to the single most important day of their entire week. And honestly, the rules that the religious leaders were requiring of the people were actually pretty reasonable. We think of them as really tough to bear. They were actually pretty reasonable. And in the end, not that big of a burden for most people. In fact, I suspect most people in Jesus' day said that the Sabbath rules were actually quite helpful for them. I mean, if you own sheep, it's a good thing to know that sheep shearing is off limits on this day. It's clear, and it's very clarifying for you. So then, why, if it's so helpful, why does Jesus feel the need to play so fast and loose with these regulations? Why is Jesus compelled not only to disregard these good rules, but to make that dissent so very public in front of everyone? Well, as one way of addressing that question, I'd like to tell you about my friend, a priest named Peter. While Lisa and I lived in Scotland, we knew a man who served as a leader of a local parish. And in Peter's church, they did a rather quirky thing each week. As they marched the cross into the auditorium for service each Sunday, that procession of people would always pause right at the threshold to the sanctuary. And every person in line would perform a rather curious gesture. They'd do two knee lifts, left, then right, before proceeding on their way, like a marching band or the military, but just that one time. And it was such an odd thing to do. When Peter became the parish priest, he decided to look into it a little bit. Why, he wondered, do we practice this before entering the sanctuary? And no one was quite sure. No one knew quite what to tell them, just that it was a rule, and it had always been a rule as long as anyone living there could remember. No one knew, that is, until Peter, doing his research, found the clue. A written record from the early days of their congregation when the building was first being built over 100 years ago. The written record said this: when you carry the cross into the sanctuary, each person in the procession should perform a single goose step, it was called, should perform a single goose step to ensure they avoid the heating pipe that runs across the threshold. They were high-stepping as if in a marching band because there had once been a heating pipe in the way on the entrance, and they wanted to make sure nobody got hurt. So they created a rule for it. Of course, that heating pipe had been removed ages ago. No one could even remember it being there in the first place. But the rule, which had once made sense in its context, still remained. And detached from its original purpose, it was now utterly nonsensical, though no one was willing to give it up after all those years. Such is the power that rules have over us. The point being, rules make sense, not in themselves, of course, but only insofar as they point to something more important than them that gives them their reason for existing. Such that when a rule is followed simply for the sake of following a rule, there is an absurdity that attaches to it that anyone looking on from the outside, like Lisa and me, could clearly see. Which is why, when Jesus breaks Sabbath regulations today, he is simply reminding us of something we probably should have known all along, but we regularly forget. When rules become unmoored from the very context that gives them their sense, they no longer serve us, but we now serve them. And that, it turns out, is but one more form of idolatry. We call it legalism, the worship of rules above all else. The Sabbath, Jesus goes on to say, is supposed to be a gift for humans, right? Not the other way around. A gift that promotes human flourishing. That's what the Sabbath is there for in the first place. That and that alone is its entire point. Which means anything else that similarly promotes human flourishing, such as eating when you're starving, or healing a man's wounded hand, is not an infraction of the commandment, but actually an affirmation of the very reason you had the commandment in the first place. Rules and religious regulations, commandments and moral codes are never in themselves the point. The point is what those commandments and codes point to. And just like the Sabbath, what all of our rules and regulations ultimately point towards, the reason we have rules and regulations in the first place, is for the sake of human flourishing. Shalom. Or, as Jesus put it, life to the full. That's why we have them. That, and only that, is the reason they're even around. We are not made for rules. The rules are supposed to be made for us. Now, the problem, of course, is that this way of relating to rules, Jesus' way of approaching them, it's just necessarily messy and muddled. Clear rules and regulations are so much tidier in life. Do this. Don't do that. Simple. Clean. Everyone knows what to do. And I confess, I quite like simple and clean, which suggests to me that rules are, in fact, a very good thing. For example, I like it that you can't just run me over when I'm crossing the street. There, it turns out, is a rule about that. The problem, however, is when rules no longer serve us and our flourishing, and we instead serve them. As one theologian writes, "Lord, save us from our Pharisaic selves, lest our legalisms fight your liberation." We've been freed from that idolatry already by Jesus. Let us not return, like the ancient Israelites, to Baal once again. That, it seems to me, is what Jesus is attempting to teach us today. The point is life, flourishing life, what Jesus calls in verse 4 of our passage, doing good, such that with every rule we encounter, no matter how sacred we believe it to be, our question is always, with every rule, does following this rule and requiring it of others help me do good? And if so, how exactly? Does it help me love God? Does it help me love my neighbor? Does it help those around me do the same? If so, then great. There is a rule worth following. But if the rule doesn't, when it doesn't help you love God, when it doesn't help you love your neighbor, when a rule, even a sacred one, actually gets in the way of those good things, when it gets in the way of helping us live out the fruits of the Spirit to every human being on this planet, then it's no longer beneficial for us, but rather a path to our own perdition. A new form of idolatry. And just like Jesus, when that happens, we would do well to abandon it. Because we are not made for rules. The rules were made for us and for our flourishing. And note that Jesus is not simply talking about Sabbath rules today, although that's the explicit context, which is why he shares David's story, which has nothing whatsoever to do with the Sabbath. And it's why he talks about doing good. He is reminding us that following commandments is never the goal. I mean, as good as it may be, following the commandments is never the goal. The goal is human flourishing, the very life Jesus came to bring. So Jesus heals on the Sabbath, even when it's against the rules. His disciples pluck grain, even when it's unlawful, because in doing so, they're accomplishing the very purpose of the Sabbath in the first place, and therefore, better following the rules than the rules themselves. The point, it seems to me, is this. If any rule, particularly a rule of faith, promotes flourishing, promotes shalom, promotes love of God, love of neighbor, that is a rule worth practicing. And the opposite is also true. If any rule, even one as sacred as the Sabbath, inhibits those good things, then there is a regulation we must immediately abandon. And that, Jesus seems to be saying, is a rule, if you will, worth living one's life by, and one's faith as well. Amen.